Welcome to the About Health and Hormones podcast. I'm your host, Lauren Allen, recovered sugar addict turned certified nutrition coach on a mission to help women learn how to balance their hormones and optimize their fertility. On this podcast, we have conversations with experts about all things health, hormones, wellness, nutrition, and more to give you the information, tips, and tricks you need to take control of your health and feel amazing in your body. I am so happy that you're here and I can't wait to dive in. Hey guys, welcome back to the show. If you're listening in real time, Chag Sameach, happy Pesach, because this episode is coming out during Pesach. And I am so excited to dive into today's topic with you because this is something that's been a really massive tool in my own healing journey, but I feel like I have not gotten into it on social media. I haven't really touched on it enough on the podcast. And what we're talking about today is meditation, and specifically making meditation an accessible tool for everyone. Because I don't know about how you feel when you hear the word meditation, but I know for a lot of people, it can feel really intimidating. And the idea of sitting there like a monk with your legs crossed for 30 minutes and trying to clear your thoughts and clear your mind feels impossible for most people. But there are so many different styles to meditation, so many different ways to practice it that can be a lot more accessible for you. And the reason that I think it's such a great tool is because it's something that is really simple. When you learn the techniques of meditation, it's something that you will always have access to. And I really like that idea of being able to have tools in my toolkit to help me feel better that are accessible whenever, wherever. I don't have to rely on a device. I don't have to rely on, you know, being able to access it financially. I don't have to have certain like physical tools in order to do it. You know, let's say I'm thinking about eating certain healthy foods or exercising. Like there are certain ingredients or equipment that you might need in order to do it the way that you want. But with meditation, you could literally do it whenever, wherever, and also you could do it pretty quickly. So we're going to talk all about the different types of meditation and how to find the right one for you. But before we get into that, I want to just talk about what is meditation. Because again, I think people have this picture of it that is really narrow and really like putting people who meditate into a box that might not necessarily be true. And meditation is really just taking time to focus your mind and cultivate a certain kind of state of consciousness. And you could do this in so many different ways. You could focus on, you know, that classic idea of like clearing your mind and silencing the mind, but that's actually one of the highest levels of meditation. It's really, really hard to do and requires a lot of practice. And it's very advanced because we have what's called, you know, like the chattering mind. Your subconscious mind is just constantly flowing with thoughts and brain chatter. And if you stop and you turn off, you know, your phone and you stop scrolling on Instagram and you really get quiet with yourself, you will notice that there's just this voice that's kind of running in the background, either narrating your day, or maybe it's making a to-do list or worrying. A lot of our subconscious voices are constantly worrying and thinking about all the things you have to do and what's going to go wrong and what's going to be stressful, or just thinking about like random ideas. I know where I have this really like random chatter is whenever I'm in the shower. My brain just goes to the weirdest random places and imagines random scenarios. Before I started the podcast, I feel like I used to spend a lot of time thinking about like, what if I had a podcast? These are things that I would talk about. And I would do these like whole episode monologues in my head. And that's really common. Sometimes people pay attention to that voice. Sometimes people don't even really notice the voice until they bring awareness to it. But one of the tools that we can do when it comes to meditation is get insight into what that voice is saying to see if it's serving us or not. Because a lot of people don't realize that the subconscious voice that's running through your head is generating thoughts and feelings that are not serving you. And I believe that this plays a huge role, not only in people's habits and behaviors, but in your health in general. So I'll give you an example of what I mean. When I talk to clients, I ask them, you know, do you have any concepts around food that are like really bad? Are there any foods that you grew up learning they were bad or they're not allowed or they're forbidden? And depending on, you know, lots of different factors, what people were exposed to, what their parents said about food when they were little. Some people tell me like, oh yeah, I know that candy is bad, or I was never allowed to have candy. And I look at candy as this like forbidden food, forbidden fruit kind of situation, you know? And that then really plays a role when they're making decisions about how to eat and what to eat. It's coming from this place where there's a lot of fear around eating healthy, or there's this like scarcity mindset of, oh my gosh, if I don't get the candy when it's available right now, I'll never get it again because it's not allowed, or my parents, you know, don't let me eat it except for on really special occasions. Even though they're an adult now and they could go into a store and buy candy whenever they want, they don't realize there is all of this subconscious stuff that's affecting the way that they're constantly reaching for the sugar. Sometimes people are, you know, having these like really negative thoughts. I know this is really common for people struggling with fertility, that something's wrong with their body and their body is broken and they're never going to be a mom. And I know I struggled with a lot of that when I was going through my own fertility journey of like really creating a schism between myself and my own body, that like I didn't feel connected to my body. I didn't want to like be living in my body, not in like a, let me explain that, because that sounds like worse than what it was. It wasn't that like I wanted to die, but it was like, I don't like waking up in this body that's not pregnant and that's constantly like stressing me out, because every sensation I had in my body of like, if my stomach would hurt, if I felt nauseous, if I felt tired, I was like, is this pregnancy? Is it me just being lazy? Is it me just, I don't know, like, why do I always feel so off? And then I would take a test and see that I wasn't pregnant. That created like a lot of really negative thought loops that I was stuck in and didn't really realize I was stuck in. Like, I didn't know how to get out of them. And one of the things that you could do with meditation is cultivate certain states of consciousness. And if that sounds really woo-woo to you, I'm going to ground it for you, because there's at least two states of consciousness that you've experienced that you know of, which is the conscious mind being awake and the conscious state of being asleep, right? I'm sure you've all been asleep before and had dreams. And you know that when you're dreaming, when you're asleep and you have a certain experience in a dream, it's like a completely different state. It's an altered state of consciousness compared to when you're awake. Another example of a different state of consciousness would be when you're drunk. If you have a lot of alcohol, your brain starts to go into a different state of consciousness. So some people have experienced other kinds of altered states of consciousness. If you ever do psychedelics, like that's another different state of consciousness. And meditation is another tool that can bring us into different types of states of consciousness and really change the vibration of what's happening in the body. And there are so many benefits to knowing how to do this, because especially if you're struggling a lot with stress, with burnout, with worry, with negativity, there are very, very specific and simple meditation practices that you can use to shift your mindset and your state of consciousness that will help you feel better, that will help you feel happier and more excited and more grateful. And there are so many measured and studied benefits to meditation, including some of the following. We have seen that when people regularly practice meditation, that can help them lower their blood pressure. It can help them experience reduced stress levels. It can improve their sleep. It improves emotional regulation, increased focus. It enhances mood. It reduces aggression. It promotes greater adaptability to different life circumstances. We see that people have healthier aging processes and have a greater sense of empathy and connection with others. It can improve your relationships and it can really improve your healing journey. And I want to tell you a little bit about my own experience with getting into meditation, because this was not a natural thing for me to get into at all whatsoever. But the story about it is kind of funny. So I'll tell you, my first couple of experiences with meditation happened in school. One was when I was in high school and the other was when I was in college. And when I was in high school, I went to an Orthodox Jewish high school that was kind of funky. And what we had to do every morning was davening. We had prayers every morning. And 1 week a semester, they would offer this like alternative davening option, which meant you could sign up for either like the yoga minion or meditation minion or music minion. There were like all these different kind of interesting things that we don't usually do, because just sitting and like holding a prayer book and trying to recite prayers in Hebrew is not something that a lot of high school kids connected to. But there was this 1 week every semester where they tried to really help us connect in different ways. And we would just kind of do it like based on what our friends were doing. So I signed up for the meditation minion with a bunch of my friends. and we really liked the teacher. And I remember he had us do this thing. It was the weirdest thing, but I still remember it. This is how much of an impact it had on me. I think it's called the laughing Buddha meditation, or like a laughing meditation. And he would have us sit in a circle and everybody had to stick out their tongues. And now, like, also imagine I was in high school. So there's kids from every grade and a bunch of kids in my grade doing this. And you're like looking around, everyone looks so ridiculous because we're all sticking out our tongues. And he tells you, start laughing. So you start like forcing yourself to laugh. You're like, and it feels really weird. But then when you're looking around at all these other people sticking out their tongues and forcing themselves to laugh, it actually becomes funny. So you start cracking up and we would be like doubled over, stomachs hurting with laughter. And we would do this for like 5 minutes. And then he'd lead us into the whole way that it would connect to prayer. But what was so interesting about it was like it worked. And what we saw was nothing funny actually happened. And you could come into school and we were probably all really tired and in a bad mood because, like, you know, going to school wasn't so exciting when I was 16. And even if we were not in a good mood and nothing funny happens, you could like force yourself and force your body to get into this state as if like the funniest thing in the world happened. And then you felt afterwards like that bubbly, good feeling of I just cracked up with all of my friends. And it was so interesting. And then another thing that we would do that was really powerful, and this is, I guess, where like part of the prayer piece came in, was we had to think about a person we loved and had a really uncomplicated relationship with. So they would say, you know, like your best friend or your niece or nephew or your parents or like someone that it's really easy for you to just picture who you love and just wish like all the best things in the world for them. And so he would tell you, like, close your eyes and picture that person and just think about like showering them with all the best love. So I would pick someone, and I feel like it was my little brother because he was just like, shout out to Alex, he's very lovable. And I would just like wish all the best things in the world. Like he should, you know, have lots of friends and have success in school and have a really good day and always be healthy. And it's like very easy to have those loving thoughts flow. And then after a few minutes of that, we would switch to a more neutral person. So it would be like your bus driver or the cashier at the local supermarket that you like, someone you see somewhat regularly in your life, but you don't actually have a personal relationship with, but not a negative relationship with. And then also try to like bring in those flowing positive feelings and good wishes and, you know, good prayers for them. And we would do that for 5 minutes. And then the next level, this was the hardest one, was to try to cultivate those feelings towards someone you really don't like. And you had to pick someone. And I'm sure a lot of us picked teachers that we didn't like in high school, where then you had to like hold their face in your mind's eye and really picture their face and picture that teacher who, you know, failed you in history and always got you in trouble for talking or whatever the thing was. And really focus on like cultivating these positive emotions to them. And it was hard. It was not an easy thing to do, but we would practice doing this every morning. And it really had an effect on how you viewed different people in your life, especially people that you didn't always like so much. And that was kind of like my first dipping my toes into meditation. It was just kind of for fun. It was like this thing we were doing in school, but it was not a regular practice in my life. And then fast forward to when I was in university. So I was studying psychology and one of my classes was positive psychology. And as part of positive psychology was that we did a meditation exercise in the class and we had to do this deep breathing that was like very intense and close our eyes. And I was not friends with a lot of the kids in this class. And I remember in this deep breathing process, I started like literally hyperventilating and I felt like I was going to have a panic attack and I had to open my eyes and like the teacher had to come over to me and check if I was okay. It was mortifying. It was like one of the most embarrassing things ever. And I was just like, yeah, meditation is not for me. Like whatever we did in high school, that like whole laughing situation, that was cute and fun. But this like deep breathing, getting really quiet with your thoughts, it felt very overwhelming. And actually sometimes the deep breathing can induce anxiety in people. So I was like, yeah, I'm not interested in ever doing that again. Left it alone. It was either 1 or 2 years later, I was taking this other class for psychology. It was something like neuroscience and mindfulness, something like that, like the scientific aspect of mindfulness. And in this class, I thought it sounded really cool when I signed up and I ended up really not liking this class. We had to do these meditation exercises every single week for homework, these specific mindfulness meditations, and keep a journal on. And one of the main things that we had to do was something called the body scan meditation, which I'll get into what this is in a little bit. But like on a basic level, basically you play these videos on YouTube that walk you through the exercise and you lie down and you start bringing awareness to different parts of your body. So they'll say like, focus on your head and all the sensations in your head, all the way, you know, then your shoulders and then your chest and then your hips and your knees and your toes. And it would take like 20 minutes and I hated it. And all of my journals, I wish I could find them on like my class Moodle portal or whatever the online school system was, because they're probably somewhere floating around on the internet. I would just write like, how did I feel after the meditation? I would write, I feel angry. I feel like I just wasted 20 minutes. This was a waste of time. Like, I don't want to do this. And I just did not like meditation at all. It didn't make me feel good. Like, I definitely did not notice the positive benefits. Any of the ones that I just listened to, I did not feel that. And I had probably practiced maybe like 10 to 12 times at this point between what I had done in high school and then what I was doing in this class. And it just did not feel like it was for me. So I kind of left it alone. I was like, yeah, meditation is not for me. It doesn't really go with my personality or my vibe. And I'm not really interested in doing it. And then fast forward to my whole health journey where I started, you know, tapping into all these different things that I never thought I would do, like eating healthier and exercising more. And I was feeling so good. And I think for me, that's one of the really interesting things that I've noticed with food, is that food was kind of the doorway for me to tap into all these other health and wellness practices that are much more related to like my mental and emotional health. And I really feel like the food is, it helps my body physically get into a place where I can then really work on my mental and emotional health, because eating food in and of itself that's healthy is like, you know, it's great, but that's not the thing that's really going to enhance your life. It's when you're then able to take that and apply the way that you're feeling to your family and your relationships and your job and show up as your best self in all those other areas. And that's why I'm so grateful to my whole journey with healthy eating, because it helped me kind of get to the next level. And one of those things that came about in that time was my re-entrance into meditation practice. So when I was pregnant with Eden, I had definitely seen at this point the benefits of eating healthy. I was sold on how incredible and powerful it was. But I wasn't regularly practicing meditation at that point. And I did start doing it it was probably in my third trimester. I was preparing to try and have a natural birth, which is a whole other podcast episode in and of itself. But the short version of that is I was petrified and still am pretty petrified of needles and IVs. And I was just like, I can't get an epidural because they'll give me an IV and then I'll pass out. And I pass out from shots and from blood tests. So I was like, that can't happen while I'm also trying to push out a baby. I guess I have to give birth naturally. And that kind of got me going down this whole road of looking into hypnobirthing and natural birth. And part of preparing for natural birth involves a lot of meditation and these different hypnobirthing techniques. And I was listening to all these meditations on YouTube for a healthy pregnancy, which I found were really good because I had a lot of pregnancy anxiety. And then I ended up, thank God, having a really incredible natural labor. And I really felt like the meditation aspect helped me get through the contractions, and the breathing in particular, like the breath techniques for labor were extremely helpful to me. And then I was kind of like, okay, this stuff is really interesting. I kind of want to explore it a little bit more. And I read about and I hear about, you know, all these different aspects of why meditation can be so beneficial for the body. Let's like tap into it and try it a little bit. So at some point after I had Eden, I started getting into the practice of doing it. And one thing that really helped me was that I use Peloton for exercise. I love Peloton. I feel like I post about it all the time. It's not sponsored. I love Peloton so much because it's so easy. Everything is in one place. My yoga, my strength, my cardio. If I want to get on the bike, I can do it through the app. And they also have meditation classes. So I started trying some of the meditation classes, and it didn't happen right away that I felt like it clicked. I feel like it maybe took 20 tries altogether. But there was some point when it clicked where I sat down to do the meditation and I really noticed this different state of consciousness where I almost felt like so centered in my body and so calm and so at peace and just had a ton of clarity. Like instead of having this muddled chatter in the background of my mind, I was so aware of the thoughts that were coming in. And I really was able to, with time, cultivate certain states of mind. So I feel like I'm someone who really does tend to kind of automatically go towards the negative, go towards the stressed out. But with meditation, I was able to shift that and I got better and better and quicker at doing it to get to be in like a more positive, a more grateful mindset, just a more optimistic mindset. And that has done wonders for my health, for my life in general. And that's why I want to talk about this, because I've seen just for myself, it's such a powerful tool. And there are so many different ways that it can enhance your life. Another thing that I just think is so relevant nowadays, where we have so much information and so much media, whether it's social media or, you know, you're listening to a podcast. I love listening to podcasts. I listen to stuff all the time. And I notice there's not always a lot of room for silence in our current days. Like I know I used to also just always have something in playing in the background when I was folding laundry or cooking. It would be like a show on Netflix or a podcast or a Sheer. And like, I never really sat with my own quiet thoughts unless I was taking specific time to focus on meditation. And I think it's really important. Like we wake up with ourselves, we go to sleep with ourselves. The only thing we really know in this life is that we are going to be with ourselves. And most of us don't even have such a strong relationship with ourselves. I'm sure some of you out there do, but a lot of people tell me, oh, I really don't like to be alone with my own thoughts. That feels really scary or really overwhelming to me, which is crazy. Like we need to learn to be okay with stillness and be okay with ourselves. And I've actually found that I like myself a lot more when I'm meditating. I find it hard to feel in touch with myself and have a better relationship with myself and just like a sense of myself in general to really know who I am when things are so busy and so hectic and I'm not taking that alone time to spend with myself. I think it's such a gift. It's actually something that I really view as a treat now. If I'm like, oh, I want to treat myself, let's try to do, you know, a longer meditation. Let's do like 25 minutes instead of 10 minutes, which I did not start off doing. It does take time, I think. And like, you kind of have to build up the meditation muscle the same way that you would build up your arm muscles with lifting weights. You know, you start with 1 pound and then you move on to two and then three. Same thing with meditation. You can start small and then build up as you go. But I think it's just something that's so powerful and so accessible. And so I want to tell you about some of the different types. And you can see, you know, if any of these resonate for you, there are so many ways to tap into it. I'll share some of the resources that I really like. But I want to go through some of the different types of meditation to see what might be the right type for you to get started with. So the first type I want to talk about is visualization. And visualization meditations is where you are guided into visualizing something in your mind's eye. So that could be something as simple as me saying, I want you to picture a candle. Like close your eyes and picture a candle. I know there's not really a candle there, but you can probably draw up in your brain a picture of a candle. And you'll notice it's actually very hard to focus on an image for a long time. Maybe you'll do it for like 3 seconds and then a different thought or a different image is going to come in. And you just keep reminding yourself like, okay, go back to visualizing the candle. So when we were doing this meditation in high school where we had to picture someone that we loved or someone that was neutral or someone that we didn't like, this was a type of visualization. We were putting a picture into our mind's eye, into the brain and trying to focus on it. And you could do it with an image. You could also do it with other sensory, other senses. You can focus on a specific sound, like imagine you're hearing the sound of the ocean, or imagine you're hearing the sound of birds chirping. You could do it with a smell. I know there's this really, really good meditation on Peloton for sleep where they walk you through the 5 senses and they just tell you to like visualize and imagine all of the different senses, like the most calming and soothing version of it. So she'll say, you know, imagine the smell of like freshly baked chocolate chip cookies or coconut or whatever the thing that you like is. And when you're laying there and you're listening to it and there's really soothing music in the background, you like really are experiencing in your brain as if you smelled that really good smell. Or with texture, they'll tell you like, imagine you're laying on a silky, soft, you know, the smoothest sheets in the world. So even if I'm on my like scratchy, you know, sheets that have been used for 5 years, whatever they are, I'll feel like I'll have the sensation in my brain of, no, I'm actually on the silkiest sheets possible. And this is what's so cool about meditation is like your brain doesn't always know the difference between actually experiencing something and experiencing it in your mind. And a lot of us do this subconsciously. Like if you visualize something that you're nervous about and you envision all the ways it could go wrong, let's say, you know, you have a presentation coming up at work or a job interview and you just keep picturing it and you keep picturing yourself stumbling and saying the wrong thing and everyone laughing at you or you making an embarrassment of yourself. Like you feel shame. You feel horrible in your body because your brain is like, that's what we just experienced. Even though you know it didn't happen, visualization is super, super powerful. So this is one that I like to start with because I think it can be really simple and also really not emotional. If you're like afraid to go deep into yourself and you're not ready for something like super deep and super spiritual, I think visualizations that are really like lightly focused on, let's say, something like calming sensations or even just really neutral sensations, like picturing a candle. It's not specifically calming. It's not like saying, okay, you need to picture yourself in the calmest place in the world on the beach by the ocean, but you'll just start to train your brain of like, okay, we can hold an image in the mind's eye for longer and longer. And that's a really powerful tool that you could tap into. So visualization is the first one. I think it's a really good one for beginners. The second type that I want to introduce you to is breath work, which I have spoken about on the podcast. We actually did a whole episode on breath work and why it's beneficial for our health. I think this is another really great one for people to start with because sometimes just going into like your own thoughts and your own mind can feel overwhelming for people, especially if you're used to being on your phone all the time, if you're used to watching TV all the time, if you're used to talking all the time and you don't have a lot of silence, it just feels really overwhelming to get quiet. And breath work is able to alter your state of consciousness, not by focusing on the thoughts in your brain, but by using the power of breath, which is usually something that happens subconsciously, right? Throughout the day, even if you don't think about it, you're breathing. But when we say, you know what, we actually want to apply consciousness to this. We want to be mindful about the way that we're breathing and breathe in a specific way or with a specific pattern. All of a sudden, that becomes this like key and gateway into the subconscious, into the automatic parts of the body. And there are so many different styles of breath work. You can just do like really simple, deep breathing, you know, focus on inhaling slowly and exhaling slowly. And you could do that anywhere. You could do it for as little as 2 minutes, and that could have a really calming effect on the body. There are also more, I don't know what the right word is, like advanced or intense techniques, things like breath holding techniques where you practice filling up your lungs and holding the breath in there. And that can really alter the state of your mind. I actually love breath holding techniques. Note, don't do it if you're pregnant or if you have certain medical conditions, but like the Wim Hof breathing method involves breath holding. There's something called 4-7-8 breathing where you inhale for 4 seconds, hold your breath for 7 seconds, and then exhale for 8 seconds. So that's really simple. You could do 4-7-8 anywhere. You could look up on YouTube. There are tons of different 4-7-8 breathing techniques where they'll play different music in the background and they'll walk you through it. And the reason I think this is a great place to get started is because it doesn't really require so much. It doesn't require a lot of like willpower of the mind. You can just listen to someone who's guiding you through the breath work and it's pretty easy to follow along. So it's a really nice, like easy entrance into the world of meditation. Another one that I love is box breathing. You can look it up, but also box breathing is basically where you inhale for 4 counts and you imagine that you're drawing the first side of a box and then you hold your breath for 4 counts. You're drawing the next part of the box, like you're drawing a little square in your mind. So this kind of, you know, brings together visualization and breath work, but you just do that over and over. You breathe in for 4 seconds, you hold for 4 seconds. You breathe out for 4 seconds, you hold for 4 seconds. And then there's breath of fire, which I love. I find that this literally like cleans out the cobwebs in my brain. It literally feels like I'm recharging my whole body and lighting it up with energy. It's really cool. It is harder. Like this one has definitely taken more practice for me to get into, but it's basically where you focus a lot on the exhale and you exhale really quickly. So it's, I mean, I could do it for you. It sounds really weird, but you do it in through the nose and out through the nose, like I'm a little congested, so you could hear it. It sounds like a dog kind of breathing, but I would say also like look it up on YouTube. Don't listen to my sniffly breath of fire because it's probably gross to listen to right now. But that's one that I would say is not like a great beginner one, but if you're curious to really see how this can change your state of mind, something like breath of fire, I think is going to get you there much quicker than a more simple deep breathing method. So that's another really great one to start with. Another type of meditation that is really helpful for people and that can also be done anywhere is mindfulness. So mindfulness is like its own whole, almost like way of life, I feel like. And mindfulness was created to kind of be like the non-religious, non-spiritual way to apply meditation, and it's all about just bringing consciousness to things that happen that are usually automatic or subconscious. So again, if you think of your breath, usually that just happens automatically. But when we bring consciousness and awareness to it, we'll notice all these things like, what's the temperature of the air I'm breathing? How quickly am I breathing? What does it feel like in my body when I breathe? Am I filling up my chest only, or am I filling up my whole entire stomach? Where am I like noticing that sensation of breath is going? And when you start to pay attention to these things, it's really interesting. It just like changes the state of your mind. And you could do this with anything. Let's say you're washing dishes. When you bring consciousness to it and you notice like, what's the temperature of the water on your hand? And what does it feel like to hold the sponge in your hands and have that like slippery, soapy feeling when you put that soap on the sponge? And there's something about bringing intentional awareness to these very mundane everyday tasks that actually changes the experience of it. And mindfulness is all about noticing and not judging. So you're just kind of noticing these different sensations. And one of the things that's really cool is that this is also a habit. So when you get into the habit of being mindful, you start to pick up on things that you don't normally notice. Like I'll tell you one really sweet way that I've seen this play out in my life is like, okay, if I'm doing mindfulness and trying to do it while I'm washing the dishes, instead of listening to something, I'll have it be quiet and I'll like notice those sensations and I'll notice what it feels like in my hand to hold the dish. And maybe I'll think a little bit more gratefully of like, oh, so nice. We had this delicious meal and I'm so happy. I love my dishes. They're really pretty. And like, I'm so grateful that I have a place to put them in this kitchen and things that normally I'm like always thinking, oh, my kitchen's too small and there's so many dishes to do it. Like changes the energy that you bring to it. But what I've noticed now is a lot of times when I'm walking my daughter to Gan and I hold her hand, it's like a very intense sensation for me. Like I feel her tiny little hand in my palm and I'm just like, oh my gosh, like if my whole life was just to get to this moment, if like every hard thing I ever went through was to get to this moment where I feel her tiny little hand in my hand and she's just like, oh, she's always pulling me to Gan. She likes to skip and like run faster than me. And there's just something like that actual physical sensation of holding her hand. It becomes this like full body experience and I'm so grateful for it. And I really feel the love like for my daughter and the appreciation for my whole journey of everything that we went through to get her and to bring her into this world. And it's like something that's so simple. And I feel like I did not used to pay attention to these things. And I'm sure there are a million other cases where my kids are driving me nuts and I'm not focusing on those sensations and being grateful and like tapping into the love of it. But I walk her to Gan almost every day and it's really powerful to have that experience every morning of just like, oh my gosh, I love this girl so much. Like I would literally not change a thing in my past if it meant that I wouldn't have had this moment. And it's just a really beautiful kind of feeling to be able to tap into. And then even simple things like I walk past the trees and the flowers and with mindfulness, you just get used to focusing on these different sensations, whether it's sight or sound or touch or taste, and you appreciate things so much more. Oh my gosh, with food, there's so many incredible mindful eating exercises. You could also look this up on YouTube where you take something as simple as a raisin or an almond and you do this whole like 10-minute long exercise with a single raisin or a nut and you really pay attention to the sensation of like what it smells like and how it feels in your hand and how it feels in your tongue and what it feels like to chew and to swallow and embrace that sensation of food going down into your stomach. If you practice this even like once a month, it will change your entire approach to eating. It's incredible. So there's so many different ways you could literally apply mindfulness to anything. And also something that I love about it is like nobody knows that you're doing it. My daughter doesn't know that I'm doing this whole like meditation situation when she's walking with me to Gan. She just thinks we're walking to Gan. When I'm doing the dishes, nobody knows that it's like my meditative time. And sometimes I can't squeeze in a formal 10-minute or 20-minute meditation, but there are ways that I could just practice it in my daily life, like even with folding laundry, paying attention to the way those things feel in your hands and feeling the weight of them and thinking about the fact that you have clothing and that it's comfortable. Like there's so many really tiny little ways that it could spill out in life that I think are super, super powerful. Also, like I mentioned before, one of the things that you could do within mindfulness are body scan meditation. I actually think particularly for people who struggle with chronic pain or fertility issues or body image issues, this is an incredible thing to practice. And I told you, I had to do them in school and I hated them. But I decided when I started getting more into a regular meditation practice, I was like, okay, I'm really scared to do these again because I hated them, but I'm going to give it another try. And I found it was really, really helpful because I had had so many weird negative issues with connecting to my body after struggling to get pregnant. I also noticed a lot, even when I was nursing with Eden, that there was a lot of mistrust in my body. Like if there were days where I would try pumping and not a lot was coming out, I'd be like, oh my God, what's wrong with me? And I can't even feed my child and I'm the worst mom. Like my brain would automatically go there instead of taking a second to be like, wait, let me just check what's going on with the pump. And I would see that I forgot to put one of the parts on. And the pumps are like very particular. If you don't put the bottle in the right way, or you don't put all the different pieces in, like it's not going to have the suction. And, or sometimes I would have it on the wrong setting and I just have to change the setting. And then immediately my milk would flow. And I was like, oh, like, why am I so quick to blame my body and say something is wrong with my body and not immediately think like, hey, let me check the pump and see if all of the pieces are put into place normally. So when I would notice that a lot, because I was practicing the mindfulness, I was like, let's start doing some body scan meditation. And this was something that I found, first of all, very relaxing. I like doing these before bed, where you just bring awareness to different parts of the body. And it's really about keeping things neutral. It's not about, you know, having these affirmations of like, oh my God, I'm in love with my body and I have the perfect body and everything about my body is so beautiful. Especially if you don't believe those things, like, it's very hard to do that kind of meditation if you don't really believe it's true. But you're kind of just bringing awareness. So you're focusing on, let's say, like, okay, these are my right toes. And what do they feel like right now? And what sensations do I notice coming up there? And depending on how long the meditation is, you'll, you know, get even more into detail. Sometimes they'll have you focus on each and every toe. And you might realize, wow, I've never in my entire life spent even 2 seconds focusing on my left pinky toe. Or maybe if you banged your toe that day, you're like, I feel pain. It feels throbbing. I feel a lot of blood flow there. And when you pay attention to all these different parts and notice what comes up, you'll see really interesting things happen, especially when you pay attention to, like, you know, different areas where we tend to store a lot of tension. Your eyebrows, a lot of people like scrunch up their eyebrows, or the shoulders or the neck. I find the throat, I have a lot of tension stored in my throat or my jaw. And that can be really related also to like stress around the thyroid. So paying attention to these different parts of the body. I know, like, also focusing on the pelvic floor area, I noticed a lot of just like hard thoughts coming up when I would pay attention to that part of the body because of the whole trauma of infertility. And just going through the body scan meditation where you like really ground into your body and you can just repeat like, this is where I live. I'm safe in my body. And I'm paying attention to these sensations. The regular practice of that is incredibly powerful and incredibly healing for people who have struggled with, you know, again, various issues when it comes to their relationship with their body. And there are so many different ones. Again, there's so many free ones also on YouTube. And I recommend listening to a guided one because it's hard to stay focused with it on your own, but it's easier to keep your focus and keep the attention on these different areas of the body when you're listening to someone else guiding you through it. Okay, let's keep going. Another option, if none of these have really appealed to you because you're like, I just can't picture myself sitting still in this way or I don't really connect to any of these, walking meditations are another really great option. Walking meditations are not really meant to be a form of exercise. It's not about like, okay, go for a walk and while you're doing it, meditate. When I've done walking meditations, they have you walk really slowly. So I could do like a 20-minute walking meditation where I barely, you know, get like across the street or around the park that's near me. That's like not a huge park. Normally, I could walk around the park probably in 4 minutes, but in a walking meditation, it'll take me 20 minutes because what you're using is the movement as a way to focus your attention. And especially if you're someone who struggles with focus, maybe if you have ADD or ADHD, this could be a really, really good option for you because the movement in and of itself is what you're focusing on. So focusing on like the connection between your feet and the ground and the way that you shift your balance in order to take a step forward. And again, different meditations will have you focusing on different aspects of it or have you focus on different things in your surroundings, whether it's the temperature in the air, or the noises that you're hearing. But this is one that I find is so, so grounding. It's so helpful. If you're like just feeling like your head is really cloudy or you're in a bad mood, a walking meditation is such a great way to change your state of being. And I know for a lot of my clients, one thing that they tell me they struggle with is, you know, eating when they're bored. And it's not to say that you're not allowed to eat when you're bored. Obviously, you're allowed to eat whenever you want. Like, we don't use that kind of language when I work with people. But a lot of people tell me, I know I'm not hungry. I know this is not really a food choice that's helping me get closer to my goals. And I just feel like I'm bored. So I don't really know why else I'm doing it. This is such a nice tool to have in your back pocket, because a lot of times when we're bored, what we're really looking for is a state change. And when you introduce an Oreo, when you're bored, you're getting a state change. All of a sudden, your brain is going from bored to lighting up with dopamine because there's all that sugar and there's a bunch of chemicals in there that are going to just activate your brain to feel like really high, wired, excited. And it works. Like, that's why we eat when we're bored, because it works. It changes the state of our brain. So it's worth knowing there are other tools that can help you do that. Literally just changing the room you're in. Forget about the meditation, but changing your environment, stepping outside, that can give your brain a state change. And then a walking meditation on top of that is really going to get your brain in a different state. I know this is something that I would like to be better about it, but I've done it a bunch of times before Shabbat. Like, if I get all my cooking done and the kids are, well, I don't even care. Always, if the kids are bathed yet, I'll tell my husband, like, if I'm feeling stressed before Shabbos, I'm going to go do a walking meditation. I'll take 10 minutes to just go like ground and listen to this. And it's such a different way to go into Shabbos. Oh my gosh. I need to be better about doing it more regularly, because I feel so much more calm, so much more in my body. All the stress of like the prep and the cooking and the cleaning and getting everything ready, it just like the stress of it really settles. And you just know, like, okay, we do this every week. I've gotten it done before. I'm going to get it done again. It's all going to be good. And it takes 10 minutes. It's a really, really quick, or it could even be 5 minutes. It's a really quick way to change your brain state. Okay. Another option, if you haven't heard enough options, I'm going to go through a bunch more because I want you guys to know there's so many different types. And I really believe there's a type of meditation for everybody. There are specific sound bath meditations. So the truth is, I don't connect so much to these, but I know people who really do, like especially people who are really musical, or they play an instrument, they sing, that like just really relate to music and feel like music touches them in a way that other activities and sensations don't. Sound bath is something that creates vibration. Sometimes they use sound bowls or gongs or like other instruments to create vibrations in the room that help focus the mind and bring it into a more relaxed state. And this is one that I would recommend, like ideally if you could do it in person, because you literally feel the vibration of these different sounds. And sometimes different yoga studios will offer it. But you could also, you know, worst case scenario, if you don't have access to that, you could look them up on YouTube and see what different ones are available on the internet. They're really relaxing. And some people just find like this is the thing that really helps them get into a relaxed state, especially before bed, especially, you know, if they're feeling really overwhelmed or stressed out. So that's another option. Another type of meditation that's specific are healing meditations. So healing meditations are specifically geared towards people who are struggling either with chronic pain or a specific illness. Now, I just want to like chime in and say, I'm not here to tell you, you know, if you, God forbid, have like, you know, a horrible disease like cancer, oh, you're just going to meditate your way out of it. That's not what I'm at least talking about. Maybe there are other people who say that you could heal it all in the mind. I don't know. We don't really have the research that shows that. But maybe one day we will, because I do think there is a lot of power in our mindset. But a healing meditation can be an incredible tool when you are struggling with pain or struggling with a disease to help at least, you know, have more positive thoughts around it, but also send really healing energy to different places in the body. So I know I've done this before. Let's say like when I was pregnant, in both of my pregnancies, I had horrible hip pain and a lot of pelvic floor issues and a lot of pubic bone pain. And I just like was constantly in pain for probably like 5 months. After 4 months of pregnancy, that's when it kicked in for both of them. And I would do these different healing meditations that sent a lot of like just energy and attention to those areas that were hurting. And it would really lessen the pain. Like you just focus on breathing into those areas. I know on Peloton, they have a whole bunch of healing meditations. Another really great resource for this is Louise Hay. If you look up Louise Hay healing affirmations or healing meditations, you'll find she has a bunch of really incredible ones. Joe Dispenza also has a bunch of really great healing meditations. So there's a lot of different people who offer different types of it. And I'm not going to like get so much into the science behind it. There are other people who will talk about the science behind it. I'll be honest, I don't know so much about it, but I know through practicing it, it can be powerful, and it can be just like, again, a nice resource to have. I know that when I felt pretty debilitated in my pregnancies, I couldn't access a lot of the other tools that I usually enjoy. I couldn't go walking. I couldn't exercise. I couldn't do yoga, but I could do these healing meditations, and it was really helpful. And then I want to also talk about fertility-specific meditations, because I think this is an incredibly powerful tool to use that I used a lot in my second time around trying to get pregnant. And honestly, I didn't find any that I loved so much on YouTube. I was really looking for them. That's actually why I created a bunch of meditations. I don't know if you guys know this. In the Empowered Path to Pregnancy, there's a bunch of meditations that I guide you through in the program that are based on a lot of these different meditation principles that I'm talking about, whether it's body scan or visualizations or like different sensory ones or breathing ones that are geared towards bringing healing to the body and really helping calm down the HPO axis, which is the hypothalamic pituitary ovarian axis, like the connection between our ovaries and our brain, because sometimes stress is impacting our ability to ovulate. And we really need to focus on reducing our stress levels in the body in order to tell the body it's safe to ovulate and it's safe to get pregnant. And as much as eating healthy is so powerful when it comes to fertility, I do think the mind-body work and going into pregnancy in a place where you believe that your body is not only able to get pregnant, but like is so ready for pregnancy and is so, it's like an amazing home for your future baby and is such a powerful, incredible place. I think it's a very, very important piece of the fertility journey. So I actually have a bunch in the program. That was fun. That was like a whole interesting experience for me to also lead and record those meditations. But I'm sure there are, listen, I didn't find ones that I really connected to on YouTube. I'm sure there are other people who have them. So you can definitely do some research, but I do offer those within the program. And then lastly, I want to talk specifically about spiritual meditation, because there is definitely an aspect to meditation that I think is really spiritual when you're just getting quiet with yourself and you're really tapping into who you are and your soul. I think there is, I don't know if religious is the right word, but at least for me, there's a lot of spirituality in doing that. And one resource that I want to at least share with people, especially if you're Jewish, is there's a book called Jewish Meditation, A Practical Guide by Rav Aryeh Kaplan. This book is, I'm telling you, this book is phenomenal. Like even if you're not into meditation, I think just reading it will change so much about the way that you approach prayer. If you're, you know, someone who davens regularly, and the way that you think about God, he really gives a lot of extremely practical tools and very beautiful, deep explanations of why meditation can be such a powerful tool in connecting both to like the prayer aspect of Judaism, but also the actions you take. So like when you're washing hands or eating matzah or like whatever the actions that we're doing, because it's a very action-focused religion, he really talks about the mindset and the spirituality behind it. It's probably one of the most, actually, when I talk about like a life-changing book, this really was a life-changing book for me. I think I've read it like 3 times. I'm probably due for a reread because it's been a while since I last read it, but it's an incredibly powerful book. I highly recommend it to anyone who's looking to tap into more of like a Jewish or spiritual approach to meditation, because while there are all these, you know, like non-religious ways that you could tap into it, you know, if you're following breath work, it will calm your body down. It can give you these better feelings of like clarity and focus. But meditation is a really, really powerful tool. And I know there's also a lot of meditations out there that I specifically won't do because they'll kind of tap into these things that I'm not comfortable with religiously, whether it's like, you know, approaching the way that people think about the universe or divinity, that I'm like, if it's not within the Jewish framework, I'm not comfortable doing it. And the principles and the tactics that he talks about in this book are just incredible. Like I won't do it justice if I try to describe more than that in the book, because it's written so beautifully. He's an incredible writer. It's so eloquent. It's so articulate. And I can't say enough good things about this book. And I don't want to ruin it by even trying to like describe more of it. But he does talk about these different techniques, whether it's, you know, how to use visualization, how to quiet the chatter of the mind, contemplation, and like really thinking about who you are in your relationship to your Jewish community, to God, and using meditation as a way to enhance that. And it's been an incredible asset for me, not only in my meditation journey, but in my religious journey. So that's also something that I would say definitely if that speaks to you. And, you know, practicing meditation with the elements that will also enhance your spiritual life are important to you, I would definitely, definitely recommend his book. Okay, so I know we went over a ton of different options in this episode. What I want to do now is give you a couple of tips on how you could start a meditation practice. Because honestly, meditation can be very intimidating. I told you, it took me like 20 tries to even start feeling like it was good. So that's the first tip that I would give you is like, go in with an open mind and just be curious. Also go in knowing that it might take you a couple of times. You're probably not going to meditate for the first time and have like an earth-shattering, you know, like incredible spiritual trip. That's not what it is most of the time for most people. I think it's the kind of thing, you know, like anything else, that when you build a habit with it and you practice it regularly, it becomes easier to access those kinds of experiences and you get better at the habit once you've established the habit. It's also much easier to establish a habit when you start small. So I know that's actually one thing with the Jewish meditation book that I didn't follow is he recommends starting with, you know, these like 20-minute really intense focused meditations. I was like, I can't do that. At the time when I was reading it for the first time, I was like 20 minutes of meditation would be, it was so foreign to my routine and what I normally did that I was like, there's just literally no way that I could do that. And I would start with maybe 2 minutes or 5 minutes a day. And that is a much more easy and accessible place to start. And just remember, frequency is really more important than duration when it comes to building a habit. I do think with meditation, the deeper you go into it, when you start working on longer meditations, like when you do 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, you'll go a lot deeper. I do think the effect can be much greater when you get into those long, deep sessions, but you're not really going to be able to get there if you don't start with frequently practicing 2 minutes a day for a week. And then you build it up to like 5 minutes a day for a week. And then you go to 10 and then you go to 15. Or maybe it even takes you a month to get to 10 minutes. I don't know. Everyone should go at their own pace. But remember that taking a few minutes every single day will be more powerful than saying like, okay, I'm going to do an hour today. And then you don't do it again for like 6 months because you never find another hour that is a good time to do meditation. Something that will also really help you build the habit is designate a specific time. I know for me, if it doesn't happen in the morning, for the most part, it's not happening. So I have a time in my schedule. It's literally in my Google Calendar because I live by my Google Calendar to exercise, to meet with clients, to eat breakfast, and to meditate. And if it's not in my calendar, I end up skipping it on those days because I just won't. It's very hard for me to be in the middle of running around and doing all the things I'm doing and say like, okay, well, now I'm going to carve out 10 minutes to meditate. So pick a time that you're going to do it. I think morning and night is really powerful for a lot of people. I promise you, if you replace your 10 minutes of scrolling, whether it's in the morning or at night with meditation, if you do that repeatedly for a month, you will be living a different life. Like the act of taking time to sit quietly with your thoughts and cultivate a more positive, grateful, calmer, peaceful mindset instead of scrolling social media, it will literally change your life. Also designate a place. So it doesn't have to be fancy. You don't need to get a fancy meditation cushion, but pick a specific chair or your yoga mat or a pillow from your couch that you're going to sit on. I know a lot of people picture people sitting with their legs crossed for meditation, but it's better to pick something that you'll be comfortable doing. So if that's lying down, that's great, but I don't recommend doing it in your bed because a lot of times we don't know the state of consciousness that we enter in meditation if we're not used to doing it and we confuse it with feeling tired and going to sleep. And that was something I saw a lot in the beginning of my meditations. If I would practice them even lying down on a yoga mat, I would end up falling asleep in the middle because for my body, like lying down and relaxing equaled, okay, it's time to go to sleep. And it took some time to train my body. Actually, we're doing like a different kind of rest right now. The mind is still going to be active and it's going to be focused and we're going to be awake, but we're going to enter this different state of consciousness. Another tip I want to give you is don't judge yourself. There is no such thing as being good at meditating or being bad at meditating. It's just about being aware. So notice, and you might notice on certain days, like I know when I don't sleep well, wow, it's so much harder for me to do a longer meditation. It's so much harder for me to stay focused. My mind is wandering into a bunch of other places. That's so interesting. Look at how, you know, big of an effect sleep has on my life. It's not judgmental. It's not like, oh man, why can't I meditate today? It's really trying to stay in that place of curiosity. And that's why I also do recommend some kind of guided meditation where there's another voice telling you what to do, because a lot of times they'll also get you back on track. So I know, let's say a lot of the ones that I'll do in Peloton, they'll start you off, let's say it's a breathing meditation. They'll give you the counts of how to breathe. And then they'll say, okay, I'm going to be quiet right now and let you go at your own pace. And then after a few minutes of quiet, they might say, and if your mind wandered off and you totally spaced out, that's okay. Let's bring awareness back to the breath. But it's really good to have those reminders put into the meditations, because most people do wander off at some point. And that's okay. That doesn't mean that you're bad at meditation. It just means that you need more practice. Let go of the expectations of what is supposed to happen in meditation also. Maybe you hear some people talk about having these wild spiritual experiences and like uncovering the meaning of life in their meditations. I don't think that's what it is for most people. It might be that you're just noticing a lot of thoughts in your mind. You might notice that you just really struggle to focus a lot. Let go of the expectations of what it should be. It's not about, you know, trying to be something. It's about noticing where you're actually at and be willing to commit to trying. Be willing to commit to trying multiple times and multiple types. As I said in this episode, there are so many different types of meditation. There are types that I really love and there are types that I'm not so into. And, you know, finding the type that works for you might require trying out a bunch of different types and saying, you know what, that's all I'm focusing on this week is like, I'm going to look up a bunch of different kinds of meditations on YouTube. I know also for me, this might sound ridiculous, but I really notice it makes an effect. Like the person who's talking and their voice has a huge effect on if I like the meditation or not. So generally, this is so weird, I don't like American accents in my meditation. I like listening to British people or Australians or South Africans. I mean, I'm American, so I don't feel bad saying it, but I do not think that the American accent is soothing. I think a British accent is like the most soothing thing and it's so calming. Also, generally, I personally feel more connected when it's a female leading the meditation. Like I just find a female voice is more soothing than a lot of male voices. But also it depends. Like sometimes I'll listen to one where I love the person's voice. Sometimes there's background music that I'm like, okay, I like the voice, but I don't like the background music. I'm picky. I'm picky with my meditation. That's okay. You're allowed to be picky. But also know that, you know, you don't have to find the perfect meditation. Just practicing the habit of doing it will help you get stronger. And this is something that I don't feel like I'm perfect at all. I'll have months where I'm really consistent with meditating and I notice so much how it plays out in my day-to-day life. And then I'll have months where, you know, my kids are not sleeping and life feels really busy and hectic. And if my kids are homesick a lot, or like this week, I was feeling under the weather. I'm not, you know, I have not been on my game with meditation practice. But the truth is, recording this episode for you guys, it has remotivated me and reignited my desire to get back on track. And that's always what it's about when it comes to our habits. It's okay if you fall off the wagon. Let's just try to get back on track. And I know the first one that I try to get back into, it's not going to be like a super deep, intense 30-minute meditation. It's probably going to be 5 minutes. It's probably going to be like a really simple breath work or really light visualization meditation. And, you know, just try to repeat and keep going with it because it's such an incredible tool. And I would love to hear from you guys if you liked this episode, if this was something that inspired you to get started, if you found a meditation that you really liked. When I post this episode, I'll post some of my favorite ones on my Instagram story. So you could see some of the ones that I love. Again, a lot of them are within Peloton, but I'll post the specific ones that I like. And I would love to hear if this is something that you relate to, if it's something that has been part of your own healing journey. And as always, thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much to all of you who also have been sharing out the podcast. I've gotten so many messages from you guys saying things like, I love the show and I tell all my friends about it, or you know, I send it to my mom, I send it to my friend group, and I can't even tell you, I appreciate it so, so much when you share it out. It means everything to me. I am always trying to bring really good quality education and information to you guys through the podcast. I My goal is to always have it be free and accessible for you. So sharing the podcast really helps it grow and really helps me be able to do that. So thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. And I'll be back next week with another episode. Thank you so much for listening to the About Health and Hormones podcast. If you loved today's episode, I would love to know. Please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify so I can make this podcast even better for you all. I would love to connect with you. Follow me on Instagram at Lauren Allen Nutrition or head to my website, www.laurenallennutrition.com, to learn about my coaching programs and stay up to date on all of my latest workshops and courses. I am so glad you are here today, and I wish you all health and happiness.